This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beersmith Podcast number 61. Got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about brewing water, sort of part two in our series on brewing water, with a guy named Bob Hall. I'd like to remind you that we've got Beersmith Mobile out now. You can go to beersmith.com/mobile to learn more about that, as well as our desktop version. I'm working on a series of updates now over the summer for our desktop version. You can download a free trial of that at beersmith.com. And now, without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, my guest is Bob Hall. He's been homebrewing for 23 years. He's a BJCP Grandmaster Beer Judge. His specialty includes American Pale Ales and Belgian Styles. He also teaches biology and ecology at the University of Wyoming. And Bob, it's great to have you on the show.
Great. Glad to be here.
So we're going to talk a little about brewing chemistry this week, and you're actually following up. We had John Palmer on last week talking about water as well, so I guess this is the beginning of a mini-series here. But you teach freshwater ecology at University of Wyoming. What's the relationship between fresh water and making great beer?
Well, water is a pretty essential ingredient, and if the quality of the water that's not going into your beer is any good, then the beer is going to suffer. And so my research, so the stuff that I do at work, looks at how processes in rivers can sort of self-purify these rivers. How can rivers remove nitrate? How can they remove organic matter? And so while that's a very distant relationship to brewing, a lot of the chemical processes that I study for work are some of the same things that one would think about when making beer.
Well, I'd imagine it's important to study groundwater, right?
It is. I do very little groundwater research myself. I'll sometimes study the groundwater that's right next to the river water. But many places in the United States, and my town included, gets their water from surface water. Mm-hmm. So in the Southeast, for example, almost all the water people drink down there in Georgia is from surface water and not groundwater.
So, Bob, can you tell us for a moment what pH is and why it's important for making beer?
pH is sometimes misunderstood by brewers. pH is, people will call it acidity, but really what it is it's the technical definition is the negative logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration in a solution. But a better way to think about it is that hydrogen ions exist at such high variation in concentration, they can be a quadrillion fold difference in natural waters. So instead, what we do is we come up with a scale to reflect that difference, such that pH of 5 has 10 times more hydrogen ion concentrations than a pH of 6, which has 10 times more hydrogen concentrations than a pH of 7. So it's a way of reflecting the hydrogen ion concentrations in water.
Wow. And so what's a normal pH value?
Okay. So water can be from groundwater or for rivers can be a pH of about 6 to about 8, which is right around neutral. We call it circumneutral because it just means around neutral. So about 6 to 8 is where water is. Mash pHs are about 5.2 to 5.5, and beer pH is in the 4, so beer is more acidic than the mash.
But water that you get out of your tap tends to be a little bit alkaline, right?
A little bit, not that much. It'll be a pH of 8, usually.
And so why is that? Why is groundwater or surface water usually alkaline?
Okay, why does it have a slightly higher pH? That's because most groundwater has some limestone in it, and when limestone reacts with rainwater, it will release calcium bicarbonate, and calcium bicarbonate will increase the pH a little bit. Water treatment facilities may strip out some of the carbon dioxide in that water too, which will increase the pH some. the fact is that I wouldn't, it's not too productive to worry about the pH of your brewing water per se. The pH of your mash is much, much more important than the pH of the water.
Well, that reads right in my next question, which is, you know, why is the pH of the mash so important?
Because in the mash, what you're asking enzymes to do is break down sugars. And so the primary enzymes for that, alpha amylase and beta amylase, have pH optima in about the middle of the 5 range. And that's just two of the enzymatic processes. There's others. And the why it's important is because the pH regulates the function of proteins. So proteins are these giant molecules that are all folded up in a certain way. And the way they fold up defines how they hold on to, for example, a starch molecule. And if the proteins are not folded correctly, then they're not going to hold on to that starch molecule correctly, and they're not going to catalyze the breakdown of that starch molecule. And the pH determines how they fold. And so when it gets too acidic, you are going to unfold and alter the proteins. And if you've ever made ceviche, you've seen this yourself, where you take fish and you add acid, and it alters those proteins in the fish. And the fish goes from translucent and uncooked to a cooked state. And so what the acid does is it does a lot of the same things to the proteins that heating that fish up would have done.
But more typically, you're going to have a pH that's often too alkaline when you're making a beer, right?
In the mash, yes.
Right.
That's usually because you have added water that contains too high a buffering capacity for the mash, which will then increase the pH of the mash.
Now, what's the difference brewing light beers versus dark beers, for example?
So for light beers, there's not a lot of organic acids that come from darker crystal and roasted malts. And so for a light beer, you're going to want to use water that has low buffering capacity. And so before I said that the pH of the mash is not that important. The pH of the water is not that important. But what really is important with your brewing water is its ability to buffer changes with acid. And that's sometimes called its alkalinity. At work, I try to call it the acid neutralizing capacity, so it doesn't get confused with alkaline water. Alkaline means high pH, and water with high alkalinity means that it has a very high buffering capacity. Which in the water we're typically using for brewing is going to have a lot of bicarbonate in it. And that bicarbonate will resist pH changes so that when you add your mash to a high bicarbonate water, the mash trying to lower the pH to 5.2 using the buffers that are found in the mash. And so mashes with higher organic acids from crystal malts or dark malts will be able to reduce that buffering capacity of the water.
So you start out with a water that's fairly alkaline, right? Typically.
Yeah, so water with high, I should correct you, it's water with high alkalinity. So right. Alkaline just means that the pH is high, but whether the pH is 8 or 9 doesn't make much of a difference, but if there's high buffering capacity in the water, that will make a big difference in your final beer.
So how do you measure buffering capacity?
So the way you do it is you add acid to the water, and you keep adding acid until the pH gets to about 4.3, which is when all the bicarbonate is gone. Now, it's easy to do in a lab, and I would think that most breweries have the equipment to do that. That's not something you see for sale in homebrewing catalogs.
Yeah.
Ideally, your water supply from the city you're getting your water from will be able to tell you what the alkalinity of your water is.
So is this what we talk about when we talk about calculating residual alkalinity, for example?
Yeah, so the residual alkalinity is a little different. That's the alkalinity that's left over after you've added, after the mash has removed some of the alkalinity using its buffers. But to calculate the alkalinity, if you have tap water, it's coming from a city, you would need to call the city and find out what your alkalinity is. That is the ability to resist changes in pH.
You're just looking for a number there. What's the number you would be looking for if you got a hold of the water sheet for, say, my town?
It would, it would say alkalinity, and the units would be more likely than not milligrams of calcium carbonate per liter, or parts per million calcium carbonate. Those are the same thing.
Okay. So you're going to look for that number.
Yes.
And then, let's say you got that number. What do you do next? How do you use that to help formulate a better beer?
Okay. So what you would do then is you would use, say, for example, and I really like the nomograph that comes in John Palmer's book. Mm-hmm. You would use that in combination with knowing something about how much calcium is in your water, because you need to know the calcium as well as the alkalinity, because you can get some alkalinity from sodium bicarbonate. Some waters are highly sodic. And if you know the calcium concentrations and the alkalinity, you can use his nomograph to then calculate how you should treat your water to be able to either reduce that alkalinity, which is mostly what you do, or possibly increase it.
So that's John Palmer's book, How to Brew.
Yes.
And I actually had John on last week talking about this very topic as well. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode as well, it was episode 60.
Yeah. So I his approach I like.
So what do you recommend for controlling the pH of the water then? Let's say you find out that, you know, you do live in a normal area where the water is slightly alkaline or has high alkalinity.
Yep. Again, it's not the pH of the water that matters.
I should say the pH of the mash. I missed the pH of the mash.
And so what I do is I live in a water that that has high calcium bicarbonate because I have a lot of limestone. And we live in a weird town, and that people who live on the west side of the town get their water from surface water, and people who live on the east side of the town get their water from high calcium bicarbonate groundwater.
And you're in Laramie, Wyoming, right?
I'm in Laramie, Wyoming. And so I get very high quality. Through the magic of Skype.
Pardon? Through the magic of Skype, I have you here.
Yeah. And so I have very high quality water, but it's got a pretty high buffering capacity. And what I do is three things. One is that I boil my water before I brew with it. And because it's calcium bicarbonate, if you boil the water, what happens, the act of boiling pushes out the carbon dioxide from the water. And then that causes calcium to react with bicarbonate to form calcium carbonate, chalk. And then that chalk settles to the bottom of my boiler. And so I'm able to precipitate some of the calcium bicarbonate and lower the alkalinity of my water that way. That's the first thing I do. And then that also has the effect of getting rid of the chlorine.
Right.
And then I live close to a grocery store. I buy 4 gallons of reverse osmosis water from the grocery store and use that. I would not brew with all reverse osmosis water because it may not have some of the minerals like calcium that you really
need. Right. If you were to start with a base like that, you'd actually have to add some minerals back in, right?
And then micronutrients can be important too. It's not just big things like calcium but zinc is important in small quantities. Yeah. And so I stick with my water. And then what I will do is I will add a little bit of lactic acid to my brewing water and neutralize the bicarbonate that way. Mm-hmm. And so I brew mostly pale styles. I brew very few dark styles. And so when I brew dark styles, I don't mess around with the acid.
Right, because with the darker styles, the darker grains are automatically more acidic, right?
Exactly. So if I were to brew a porter or a stout or a Belgian dark strong, which has a lot of Munich malt, has a little bit of 120, and then some standard caramel crystal malts, I tend not to do too much. But for brewing lighter styles like saisons, I make sure that my water, I've removed most of the buffering capacity before I brew a saison.
Now, most of us homebrewers work with a different recipe every time.
Yes.
So I mean, do you measure the pH every time you brew to make sure you're in the zone?
I do. I use pH to tell when I've removed a lot of the buffering capacity out of the water. So if I start at pH 8, if I get down about the pH in the mid fives in my water, I know that I've removed most of the buffering capacity.
You're talking about in the mash, I assume, right?
Well, I measure it in my water before.
Oh, you measure it before you add it, huh?
Then I'll measure it in the mash. And I don't own a pH meter. I use a soil pH test kit.
Okay, so that'd be, is that like strips or?
No, these are indicator solutions. And so mix them in. And so they're bromothymol blue is one of them for slightly higher pHs. And they're very sensitive within a narrow range.
What would you recommend for people at home to measure their pH?
A cheap, inexpensive pH meter from a brewing company would work. They have to be calibrated. Or you could try to find a soil pH test kit. I use an old one that the extension agents at Cornell used to give away. And so they would give away these things. And I took two of them a long time ago, and it's a lifetime supply for me.
So you think that's better than using a paper strip, for example?
I think it's better than using a paper strip. The paper strips are not very effective. And a pH meter would probably be more effective.
Mm-hmm. Now, pH meter, though, has to be calibrated periodically, or...
Yes, they calibrate, and then sometimes they just don't work, and you need to replace them.
Right.
I have to use them for work, and I don't want it to bring my work home too much, so I just use these.
So, you mentioned buffering. Let's talk about buffering for a minute. What is a buffer, something like a 5.2 stabilizer do?
Okay.
Like that product that you buy off the shelf, for example.
Yeah, so that's a buffer that's going to have some of the same types of buffering capacity in the mash. It's a phosphate buffer. And so it's a combination of, I think, either monobasic and dibasic phosphate. I believe that's what it is. And so that's going to be set up. So that's going to sort of, I believe what it does, and because it's proprietary, so I don't know this, but I believe what it does is you're going to add enough phosphate to the mash, either dibasic or monobasic phosphate, to swamp out the mash pH and then swamp out any... Excuse mash buffering, and then swamp out the buffering from the from your water.
Water.
Yes, I have not used it, so I can't speak one way or the other as to how well it works.
So I mean but that's different than adding acid, obviously, right?
That is different than adding acid.
So how's it different?
And the reason is because it will work every single time. Whereas adding acid, you have to know how much to add. You don't want to add so much acid that you make your brewing water pH of 4.
Makes sense. And what about using acid to control your pH? What are the ones that you'd recommend? You mentioned lactic acid a few minutes ago.
I use lactic. A number of big brewers use phosphoric acid, and I would say either one of those two would be just fine.
Mm-hmm. I know lactic acid you can get from your brew store, right?
Yes, and phosphoric acid, I think you might be able to get it from a brew store. I've never looked for it. There's hydrochloric acid, which is nasty stuff, as it's sulfuric acid, and I would not use either of those two.
No, not at home. Mm-hmm. is there any danger using lactic acid? Obviously, you use to sour the beer as well.
Yeah, you don't want to... it comes concentrated, and you don't want to pour it on yourself. But because it's naturally found in beer, it's not going to impart any real flavor to the beer.
Unless you use quite a bit, right?
Yeah. It used to be back in the dark days of home brewing that when people would make, a Belgian fit beer, they would add enough lactic acid to get it to be sour. And you could always tell those beers, they had a really nasty sourness relative to a beer that was naturally lactic.
Well, and lactobacillus, which is a bug, also produces it, right? I mean, that's what we use to make sour beers.
Yes, and that tastes much cleaner and nicer than if you were to add lactic acid, just make your beer sour. Right. I don't exactly know why that is. I do know that you can tell when somebody's added lactic acid to their bit beer or a lambic or whatever to make it sour. It's not any good.
Not as good, huh? And then we talked a little bit about grains. What kind of grains would you recommend for trying to manage your pH?
Well, I guess I would adjust, try to, if you were...
Which ones work best?
Yeah, if you were really stuck on not touching your water, if you said,
okay. Let's pretend you're using the German purity laws to brew here and you want to, stick with Reinheitsgebot.
Yeah, and then forget about acid, malt, and fight and rests and things like that. So if you really were just stuck with it, the rule of thumb is that the more buffering capacity in the water, the darker the malts you would need to use. So Munich malts, crystal malts, and roasted malts.
So can you talk for a minute about residual alkalinity and how that's different from alkalinity, which we talked about a minute ago?
Yes. Residual alkalinity is the alkalinity that's left over after the water reacts with the mash. And so in a light beer, if you add the same amount of if you add the same brewing water in a light grain mash is going to have higher residual alkalinity than one in a dark grain mash, and that's because the dark grains are going to react with and and eliminate some of the alkalinity that is the buffering capacity in the water, and so there'll be higher residual alkalinity in a light malt mash, and so it's that residual alkalinity that matters, because that allows you to consider variation in your mashes. So if you are brewing a Pilsner one day and a porter the next day, you're going to consider the residual alkalinity to be able to, as to how you're going to treat your water.
You calculate that as well. How do you actually go about calculating residual alkalinity?
I would use the John Palmer approach, or any of the brewing software that is. There's some water software right out to do that. It's much easier to use that than it would be to sit down with a pencil and paper
and try to calculate it all
yourself.
Sure.
I mean, that's what I would. I mean, I could do it that way, but again, I have to do this stuff for work, and so I probably would just use something simpler at home.
So we covered up through the mash now. How does water play a role in fermentation as well?
Well, the pH of the fermentation is going to play a role. But really what happens is that in the fermentation, the yeast release acids, which then lower and plus a lot of carbon dioxide, which is going to have the effect of lowering the pH of the beer. So beer has a much lower pH. However, if you brew a beer with a too high pH water and the finishing beer has a high pH for beer, the beer will taste a little bit flat. Mm-hmm. And so beer with a lower pH is going to taste crisper and brighter than beer with a higher pH.
And you mentioned it goes all the way down to something like 4, right?
Yeah, up to a point, in which case beer starts tasting sour.
Right.
And that's not good.
But 4 is pretty low. I mean, that's comparable to, say, a Diet Coke or something like that, right?
The Coke would be a lower pH.
Okay, a little bit lower pH than that.
Yeah, sure. And that's phosphoric acid that's causing low pH in Coke. I really noticed it the first time. It was many years ago when I brewed a beer for and we had a party after some judging, and I gave a beer to a colleague of mine who's a judge from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and he goes, "Good beer, Bob, but it really kind of tastes sort of chalky and flat." And I realized, oh, that's because I really didn't mess around with the water. So I now do that.
So tell me, let's take that approach from a judge's perspective, because you're a grandmaster beer judge. What's the difference you're going to taste in a beer that was properly, where the pH was properly managed during the mash, versus one where maybe nobody paid any attention to it?
Let's see, as a judge, it's hard to say what people are doing with their water. Usually we find some random flaw in the beer that we don't like. Or some flaw that is not acceptable. But it's like I said before, the higher pH is going to make beers taste a little bit more flat than they do with the lower pH. If you have altered the water in such a way to be way out of style, then that would be noticeable too. So let's say you add too much calcium sulfate or magnesium sulfate, which just creates sort of the quote Burtonizing effect of the water, and that will have the effect of emphasizing the hops. And so from flavor perspective, the other ions tend to start mattering at this point. And so chloride to sulfate ratios might matter. Chloride will accentuate the malt and the roundness of the beer. Sulfate will accentuate the bitterness and the dryness of the beer. And so, and those don't have anything to do with pH, but they will alter the final flavor of the beer.
So what's
stronger than a missed pH in the mash?
So, I mean, there's 6 ions that we typically look at when we're looking at a water profile. Let's say you're looking at London or Burton or something like that. Mm-hmm. How do those really play a role in the flavor of the beer? I know you just covered a couple of them, but.
Well, it, it, yeah, the, chloride to sulfide is a big one, because again, you know, sodium, a little bit of salt will increase the make a beer taste a little bit warmer, up again to a point in which case the beer will then merely taste salty. calcium sulfate accentuates dryness, and then other ions that you simply don't want in beer, things like iron. You want that to be in as low a concentration as possible. Otherwise, you'll get a metallic blood-like taste in beer.
Yeah, I know that's a big problem in some areas of the country.
Yes, that can be a big problem in some. That can be a big problem in some places. A common problem with drinking water is organic constituents, which make drinking water taste muddy or dirty. A lot of times it's algae that live in reservoirs that do that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm not sure how that translates into the final beer.
And what about chlorine? I know some cities like to flush their system with chlorine.
Chlorine is absolutely death for beer. it reacts with the phenols to produce chlorophenols, and that makes a really strong medicinal, difficult to drink beer. Chlorine is luckily easily gotten rid of by boiling or via carbon filtration.
Right, but a lot of people don't pay attention, and you know, there's about a week, a year, where a lot of the water systems, they like to put a lot of chlorine in, flush the system out.
That's right.
Problem. It's usually in the springtime they do this. Typically, a lot of municipal systems will do this.
I boil all my water before I brew with it. I don't mess around with chlorine.
Any others you want to talk about? Magnesium, I know, plays an important role in fermentation, right?
Yeah, it'll be a nutrient. It's similar to calcium. I'm not sure. I would have to look up any differences as to how magnesium versus calcium are going to alter a flavor profile for beer.
Can you summarize maybe for us how all the chemistry works together to make a better beer, and how really managing your pH helps you make a better beer?
Okay. So pH is going to be important for mashing and enzymatic reactions, and so that's going to be a dominant control on how the brewing process goes. It will also affect the flavor of the beer in terms of the final acidity of the beer, with a slightly more acid beer having a better flavor profile, at least a less flat flavor profile. The ions are also necessary because yeast need them as part of their metabolism. So a calcium-free beer would be a bad beer. There has to be some amount of calcium in beer. Very hard water, like calcium sulfate, and by hard meaning there's a lot of minerals there, but not much buffering capacity because it's calcium sulfate and not calcium bicarbonate. That will increase the perception of bitterness and dryness in a beer. And then sodium and chloride don't strongly react with the yeast that much, so they won't strongly control the biochemical reactions that go on in beer, but they will strongly affect the final flavor profile. And that's an easy test for yourself. You could easily just get yourself known amounts of salty water and add it to beer and see how that would change the flavor.
Where can somebody learn more if they want to learn a little bit more about water chemistry? What would you recommend?
Oh, let's see. There's some decent websites out there. I know that John Palmer and Colin Kaminsky are going to produce a book on water that will come out in November.
Yeah, John talked about that. That's Brewers Publications putting that out.
Yeah, I would think that would be the first and last word for brewing with water. Understanding water with brewing. And so I'm waiting for that book to come out.
Okay, that's still coming out. But what other, you have some other resources you might recommend?
If you're really geeky, you can look into some brewing textbooks. So I have Michael Lewis's brewing textbook. That's got some information on water in it. George Fix's textbooks will have information on water. Chemistry and how that affects enzymes, you know, a biology textbook that you used in college would be just fine for that.
So Bob, could you finish with a couple tips on, for homebrewers, other than, you know, some of the things we've already covered?
Yeah, I'll give you three tips, and these are ones that you've heard a zillion times before, but I'll give them anyway, just because I seem to forget them myself. One is I've been using really high quality hops, and Back when I started brewing over 20 years ago, the hops weren't that good. And now we're getting hops that are just almost as good as breweries. And it really has changed the way I think about my beer. And I really like some of the new varieties that we're getting. I'm using a lot of Meridian at the moment, and it's fantastic.
When you talk about high quality hops, are they super fresh? Are they very fresh, and are they packaged well?
And they're stored really well. I store mine in vacuum sealed bags in a freezer, and they last for 2 years. So wow. If I don't use up all my hops, I don't care. I keep using them, and they work great. Using lots of high quality yeast is another good one. I buy only a few strains of yeast, and I use them over and over again, like a brewery does, so that I don't have to keep starting with propping up yeast.
And I assume you use a starter, right?
I always use a starter, I repitch. And so my favorite strains are the Chico strain, the American Ale strain, the French Saison strain, and the Chimay strain. I brew almost all my beers with those three strains.
Yeah, I had a guy the other day ask me, why do you use a starter? Why do I need this big, 2 liter, 3 liter starter? What is that doing? Yeah, I'm like,
but
you don't have to if you don't want to, but it's going to make better beer, you know?
I only use the starter a couple of times, and then from then on, I just repitch yeast, keep my yeast fresh and healthy, and brew fairly regularly.
So do you wash the yeast then?
I don't do anything like
that. How do you reharvest it then? Or how do you
I just pull it out of the fermenter and then make sure I brew within the next, I either brew that day or within the next day or two.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's slurry. Doesn't last that long. A couple of days.
It doesn't last that long. Yeah. So I'm brewing right away. I'm not storing, the stuff. And this maybe again exemplifies my age as a brewer, but I used to brew with chlorine and dish soap to keep everything clean. And PBW and Star Sand have changed my life.
Dish soap's not a great idea.
It's a terrible idea. And chlorine's an even worse idea. It gets all over your clothes. It trashes your stainless steel. There's nothing good about that stuff. And so, I mean Clorox.
Well, Clorox tends to get into your plastic, which is not good. And as you point out, chlorine's not good for stainless steel. So,
yeah, the chemicals Star Sand and PBW are safe. I use lots of them, and infections are a thing of the past.
Now, I'm trying to remember, Star Sand is the cleaner, right?
No, Star Sand is the sanitizer.
I'm sorry, I got it backwards. PBW is the
phosphoric acid-based sanitizer. It combined with a surfactant. So the surfactant opens up the bacterial cells, and the phosphoric acid goes in and kills them. And then PBW, which is I forget what it is, sodium percarbonate, I think.
Yeah, you can get that at the hardware store, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of places. Well, Bob, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks. I'll be giving this as a formal presentation at the American Homebrewers Association National Conference.
So you are going to the National Conference.
I am.
Two weeks now?
And so that'll make the chemistry a lot easier to understand than me explaining it. So I'll have a nice PowerPoint presentation in an hour to explain some of the chemistry. And I plan to go into the chemistry just a little bit deeper, and I'll spend less time on the water and more time on the chemistry. The reason why is because I won't be able to duplicate the work that John Palmer and Colin Kaminsky have done, but I can teach about some of the chemical principles.
Well, good. Well, I'm looking forward to that talk, and I'll be at the homebrewing conference as well. I'll be speaking. I'm actually be talking about designing beer this time.
Oh, good, good.
Which would be good. I'm going to give a kind of a round the world tour on designing beer. So it's going to be a variety of different techniques, but I think it'd be fun. And we're going to be hosting a booth there as well. So that's Philadelphia, the 27th of June, I think.
Yeah.
For those of you lucky enough to get a ticket, I guess they sold out in 24 hours again.
Yeah, it was very quick. I will be, I'll be speaking at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. So it'll be interesting to see how many people make it.
I think I am too. I'm going to have to peel myself out of bed, but looking forward to that conference anyways. It's a highlight. Certainly one of the greatest home brewing experiences you can have. So highly recommend that. I think next year they're talking about having it somewhere in the Midwest, but the National Home Brewing Conference.
Yeah, well, that'll be a fun time. It always is. I really enjoy it.
Well, Bob, thank you again for being on the show. I really appreciate you being here.
You're welcome. Glad to participate.
It's great to have for the very first time, Bob Hall. He's been homebrewing for 23 years. He's a BJC Grandmaster Beer Judge, and he's a professor of biology and ecology at the University of Wyoming.
Thanks.
Well, a big thank you to Bob Hall for appearing on this show. We really appreciate him being here. A reminder to you, you can sign up for my newsletter at beersmith.com. Just look for the little newsletter link on the right side, and we'll send you an article on homebrewing every week. If you have feedback for the show, you can also leave it to us at beersmith.com/blog, where you can also find all 61 episodes of the podcast located. And we also have our discussion forum at beersmith.com/forum, where you can also leave comments for the show. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.